Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Getting It Out podcast. That was San Diego shoegaze duo Blossom. The song was called Warm Stay, and it's off of their new EP, Florisser, out everywhere right now, courtesy of Really Rad Records. That EP came out just about a month ago on March 18th, and I've been going back to it quite a bit. Blossom is a young band with a lot of promise, so I'm not surprised to see them being pushed out there by Really Rad Records, who, just as their name says, release really rad records. Last year, they put out several that I really enjoyed, Dasser being the one the most, Day Aches, Shark Swimmer, Broken Record, and those are just the ones that are coming to the top of my head at the moment, and surely there'll be more to appreciate this year in 2024, and Florisser by Blossom is a great example of that. Sometimes it might be hard for me to find a place to fit in a shoegaze band and shine light on the softer side of the music that I love. But what better than an episode where we're getting a little wimpy as we're talking to Jonah Matranga, also known as One Line Drawing. I hope this one catches you off guard. So let's have the most brutal moment of this episode with the Getting It Out intro music, courtesy of Hot Zone.
Chicken! Make family out of friends! Make friends out of enemies! Peace to my family! Make friends!
I can't say I saw this episode coming. Neither can you, unless you follow what I do better than I do. And maybe that's possible, but I don't think I have that many fans out there. I don't think I have any what I would call fans out there. Just a couple of people that listen to the show from time to time. I haven't wondered aloud recently, though I should more often. How many dedicated listeners do I have? How many people that listen to every episode? My guess is I have one, and she lives with me. And that's fine. I don't listen to every episode of any podcast, except for maybe The Mismatch with Chris Vernon and Kevin O'Connor. That, of course, is a basketball podcast. There's lots of basketball stuff I could talk to you about right now, but I'm not going to do it. That's what Punks and Dunks is for. I hope if you're interested in that, you listened to last week's episode of Punks and Dunks with Raymond Ruiz of Extinction Burst Records. I mentioned there, I'll mention it here as well, that there is a full regular Getting It Out episode with Raymond Ruiz to discuss Extinction Burst Records. That will be the label spotlight of April. So be on the lookout for that one. Anyway, this week I have another guest for Punks and Dunks. You'll hear about that once it's recorded. Every time I say I'm out loud, they get fucked up and screwed up, and it's harder to line up these basketball podcasts than anything else I've ever done. There's not many of us out there that like extreme music, underground music, whatever you want to call it, and sports, specifically the NBA. Anyway, let's talk about this episode. Let's talk about what's going to happen here. Recently, I did an interview with Stretch Armstrong guitarist David and Scott, and we talked about their new record that came out on Iodine Recordings. And shortly after that, there was a knock at my door for more Iodine recording stuff. In their most recent release, at the time, not since then, they've put out the No Man record, which is great, by the way. The Sketchbook, a collection of songs from one line drawing spanning from 1999 to 2001. I admit that I was largely familiar with one line drawing in name only. I know what it was. I know what it sounded like. Never dug into it. The one line drawing and Jonah himself, of course, did play on a lot of shows that I attended. So we reminisce a little bit about that and how that was back in the day. We even talk about how I didn't like it, but yet he persisted and we all grew up. We all matured quite a bit. Things have changed. I'm talking over 20 years ago, and that's just about the halfway point in his career. He's been at it for much longer than that. We barely touch on his time in Far. Maybe we mention Gratitude. I think he brings up New End Original once. I bring up Sons of Alpha Centauri, his other band that he's currently in, who I'll play a track for you at the end of this episode. There's a lot to pick from his discography. You know, I didn't even ask him one of the questions that I wanted to ask him, which is what makes it Jonah Matranga and what makes it one line drawing. But as I always say to my interviewees and sometimes to my listeners, I'd rather leave a little meat on the bone, leave some questions unanswered, than go on for too long. Speaking of going on for too long, I think I've talked enough. I should play you a track from Sketchbook 1999 to 2001 by One Line Drawing. This is Crush on Everyone, and then my conversation with Jonah.
If you have just one, let me be that love. If you have lots of others, please let me be. Let me be one. Let me be one. If you like undressing, please let me find out. If you like large intestines, please let me find. Please, please, please let me find out. Let me find out. Or if you're gone for weeks on end in crazy situations and don't know why you drive through cars in dirty foreign towns, let me find out. better than not knowing. Or if you're just as scared as me, if that's what it's about, please let me find out. Please let me find out. Please let me find out. Please let me find out.
Typically, it's heavy music. It'll be death metal, hardcore, punk, whatever, but I don't know if I've ever had it on a band or an artist that would be classified as an emo artist. So this might be the first.
Well, I've been classified as a lot of things, so we're in luck.
That's true. But more importantly is I've never cared about what anybody's classified or what it's called. I just like to have on music and artists that I enjoy, and you're one of them. So I'm happy to have
good.
You.
Good. I'm so happy. That's kind of what has made my whole musical life work, is because I don't fit in any of the genres as far as I can tell, yeah. No matter what, you know, different labels have been, thrown around. And so it's really some of the people who I've had the longest relationships with concerning the music are people who, as listeners, really don't care what the genre is. They just care about the feeling of it.
Sure.
And I think that's where I live.
Yeah, it's a good place to be, I think. Yeah. That's the best place, actually.
It's the only place for me.
Well, I guess my introduction for what you have done, was early 2000s, maybe late 90s. I guess in the early days the first iteration of One Line Drawing. I don't think I even knew you had anything to do with Far until far later. I don't think I ever knew that correlation between you and Far, of course.
Yeah, I have had so many hilarious stories of people knowing one iteration of me and then hearing another one and liking it or not liking it or whatever, but mostly it's liking it and then figuring out, oh my God, it's that guy. And so I've had the funniest one I can recall is when I was on tour with New End Original, who is a rock band. Mm-hmm. Was a rock band that started, and that's an anagram for One Line Drawing.
Yeah.
And this is all around that 99 to 2001 Sketchbook time. Some of the songs on Sketchbook actually ended up as New End songs. So anyway, I was on tour with New End, and speaking of all this confusion, and we were in a pretty big place. We were opening for Jester Bazil, and we were done with our set, and I went back to, sell merch and hang out. And someone came up to me and said, hey, I owe you an apology. And I said, oh my gosh, why? And he said, I spent half of that set, the New End Original set, being so mad at whoever this motherfucker was that was ripping off Jonah. And then he's like, and then I realized it was you. So I've had a lot of like funny things like that, but that one is always the story that comes to mind that makes me giggle.
That's very funny. That's awesome though. But you mentioned that this stuff that we're kind of talking about here is off of the Sketchbook record that kind of just came out and is also still yet to be released. One of these iodine.
Yeah. We're in the age of the long pre-order these days. So it's the pre-orders out. It's something's happening. The records are being pressed. And then the street date is, so I think it's May 10th or something. I don't know when this is going to air, but anyway, it's sort of out, sort of not. And all of this stuff is sort of out, sort of not, because all the stuff on the vinyl is just really, it was when it either it's never ever been on vinyl. In fact, only side A has ever been on vinyl as far as a 2LP set. Mm-hmm. So only one of the four sides of vinyl has ever been on vinyl. And even that was released forever ago on a tiny German label on 10-inch vinyl. And so it's been a beautiful process to go back and look at this crazy time of my life where stuff was getting released, but it was getting released in all these very personal, strange ways that 99.999% of the world never knew about. Yeah. But the people who did know, it was this cool family. It was kind of after Far, and there was a great little crew around that music. And then One Line Drawing was sort of born of these days words like crowdfunded and crowdfunded patronage and Patreon and Kickstarter and all that stuff, that they're common. They're how artists, try and survive. And that was all stuff I was playing with back then, because I was just really curious about if we could really do it in a personal way and not need a bunch of labels and all of the things. And yeah, so it really worked out, but it is a crazy time looking back on it. And it's really fun to, I really feel like I'm releasing a lot of this stuff for the first time. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful actually, even though it was recorded so long ago, it feels so fresh and I'm really happy about that. And I think like you and I were just talking about, I think it feels fresh because when the feeling is there, the years don't matter either. As far as I can tell, I can find it, discover a song from 1932. And if it's got the feeling, it's got the feeling and it's new. And so I like to think of these sketchbook recordings and this whole release is relatively an introduction to the world for a lot of this music. And I love it.
Well, speaking of time, how early or how far back do these songs go? I know it's, labeled 99, 2001, totally. When did you write them?
It's a great question. And the furthest recording back, it's going to be on, I think the furthest recording, is this true? I keep wanting to say one thing and then lying. Gosh, it's either Tides. There's some stuff on Sketchy One and Sketchy Two that was recorded way before those things got released in air quotes. It's a good one. The one that keeps coming to mind though is Tricky. It was recorded a really long time ago when I was in Far. In fact, I tried to give the song to Far. I really wanted Far to play it, but it didn't work out. And so the demo basically sat there and then it was on a split with Sensefield and Juliana Theory. No, it was on a split with Juliana Theory and Grey AM, mixing up my splits. And it was just this one song that I had on it. And so that is probably the oldest recording, but I would say generally speaking, everything was thought of and recorded and everything else between 99 and 2001. And then there are some things on the Sketchy EPs that were recordings that had been sitting around. And honestly, pre 99, when I was in Far and then doing this, these weird little demos on the side and stuff, trying to show them to the band, but also knowing that the songs would never fit in the band, right. was Waiting for Sunday, honestly, is a song that was written, and that's not on Sketchbook, but it's a Far song, but it was written a long time before it ever made it to a record. Cause sometimes songs just take a little while to make their way into the world, I guess. Sure. I don't know, especially when you make as many as I do or something.
Yeah, you do make a lot of songs, man. That's one thing your stuff. And I'll get to it later, but I was, you're all over my emails right now. I get a lot of press emails all the time, but you, with all the stuff with you doing with it, with this, with Sketchbook, with Sons of Alpha Centauri, with, with you.
Yeah, Plutocracy Planet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, I know.
It's coming from all different, my contacts are all reaching out about Jonah.
It's really funny. And it's so perfect because Sketchbook is chronicling another time in my life. Mm-hmm. When I was running around, the stuff I did a split with Rival Schools. There's a split with Sensefield, a split with Juliana Theory. There's all of these different collaborative things that were happening. And then the Sketchy stuff in and of itself, because it was recorded in such strange and different ways. There's tons of people wandering in and out of recordings too. There's a recording on there called Oh, I'm So Lucky.
Yep.
Where I recorded I wrote it and recorded it on the day my grandpa died. When I was in Baltimore playing the Auto Bar and I was up there recording it straight into my computer, just as none of this was planning for release. It was just a thing of me kind of processing my grandpa's death because he came through the depression and all this crazy stuff. And he would always say, I'm so lucky. And I really took on that attitude. And so I was sort of singing for him and making up words. And then I swear to God, and you can hear it on the recording, this guy, I think I had just played, I think Dashboard was playing that night as well or something. And in Dashboard's band was a guy called John Wiley. And I think I'm remembering this correctly. And John wandered up into the backstage area.
Like the Eulogy Records, John Wiley?
I don't know. Probably. I've never talked to him before or since. This, yeah. All I know. And literally, I literally sing about this in the song for anyone who ever goes back and listens to the song. I was singing and he walked in and he started to harmonize with, Oh, I'm so lucky. Cause it's a cute little chorus thing, hook thing. And I was so smitten with this stranger harmonizing to the tune and like hanging out and getting in the vibe that I put him in that verse. And it's just one of my favorite documents of pure random creativity and collaboration. And I really hope I get to meet Wiley again someday, because I'm almost positive it was him, but I could be making it up. And anyway, that's all a perfect reflection of what's happening right now as Sketchbook is released, because I'm also doing all of this other stuff with, the Plutocracy Planet song is so heavy and weird. And then the Sons of Alpha Centauri stuff is so riffy and kind of 90s Sacto rock kind of. Mm-hmm. And to then be also doing this double vinyl of these weird demos I was making around the era that Sons of Alpha Centauri in particular is so influenced by. It's just I'm in a very funny time of life right now. And in particular, this cycle of this release, because of these three incredibly different things being released, all in totally different ways, by the way, none of it is orchestrated. It's just all arriving at the same time, which says a lot about my life. And I'm grateful for this messy, hilarious overlap life.
Yeah, it can't be considered a bad thing when you got it going on like this. You mentioned a bunch of things there.
When I'm 30 years in and I'm making music that I like and that anyone gives a shit about, and there's three separate things being released that could not be more different than one another.
Right.
This is a win for me. I other people have more money and more lots of other things. And I just don't know anyone who's had a 30-year run like I have. And I'm really, really, really grateful for that.
It is a very unique 30-year run. It's pretty impressive, just given, like you said, the diversity of it all. I'm glad you went into detail on Lucky, because that is a specific track that I wanted to ask you about. I lived in Baltimore for a decent amount of time. And I hear you mention in the song that you're in Baltimore. And I wanted to know, where were you in Baltimore? And now you just told me it's the Auto Bar, which is a place I adore and have had so many memories. That's the first show I ever went to, was at the Auto Bar down there.
The first show ever?
Well, the first show in Baltimore. That was probably when One Line Drawn was still doing the first round with, that was a heavy metalcore converge. A Life Once Lost every time.
But I played with back then too.
That's one of the reasons why I
played Hellfest. I would tour with Kohi Thursday.
Exactly.
It was such a weird time.
I remember. And that's my era. You know what I mean? I'll be 40 this year. Totally. So that's when I was right coming out of high school and going into college, and you were playing with the heavy bands, and you were like the beginning of those people.
I love you know the outside.
Yeah. Oh, man.
The Auto Bar is a magical place.
It is.
Not only was Oh, I'm So Lucky improvised and recorded there, but also there's a song called Stay off a record called The Volunteers. Mm-hmm. That vocal also was, the track was there because it's an instrumental track from a thing called Of Sinking Ships, which is in turn a side project of a band called Hope's Fall, which I'm sure you know from back in the day. Yes. So I fell in love with this Of Sinking Ships cassette, and I was driving around doing One Line Drawing shows, and I fell in love with this one tune, and I just freestyled a melody and a lyric into my laptop, which again was after a fucking magical Auto Bar show. So there's something about that place that has produced not one, but two of my favorite off the cuff recording moments. So I love that you have any familiarity with it, because it is a venue that has a really special place in my heart.
It's one of my favorites in the world. It'll never top the Sidebar as my favorite venue ever, but Auto Bar is wonderful. And I have so many memories in there.
I'm so cool. That's
good
so
and bad, honestly, but mostly good.
Hey,
mostly
good. I don't know any big memories that aren't a little of both sometimes.
Right.
And especially around music, a lot of big feelings around music. So there you go.
There you go. One of the other things I wanted to tell you about is that the reason I was familiar with One Line Drawing to begin with is that right now I'm sitting in where I live, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is where CI Records is based out of.
Jeremy.
Yeah. So One Line Drawing was, visible for us here, even if it wasn't everywhere else before we really knew how to
use
the internet.
All because
correctly.
Of Jeremy. Jeremy's tireless work with
Still
CI
got a
Records.
Storefront down here.
I mean, that. To this day, I don't think I've ever seen a human go as hard as Jeremy does. Wow. Yeah. Just a really neat human. And yeah, of course, exactly. That's how the Sensefield split happened. He did a pressing of Sketchy 2. I believe he did a pressing of some of the always new stuff. So yeah, we've done some really neat stuff together, and I always dream of doing a show or a record or something with him again. So man, you're bringing it back. Lancaster, Audibar, CI Records. Whew.
That's it. I've only left three places: York, Pennsylvania, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and Baltimore. Hilarious. So I got nothing.
And I'm clearly following you around. That's amazing. Or vice versa. That's perfect.
Well, all right. So the sketchbook stuff, like we said, it's a collection of songs from 99 to 2001. And I've listened to it a whole bunch of times, and there's a lot of songs that really stand out to me. And two of them, well, one of them was Lucky.
I love that.
But and they the other one also features a cameo and is really endearing to me. And it's the Mercat song.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that one?
Yeah, that's perfect. So a lot of the way that I was creating and the things that I was creating were informed by my fatherhood. A lot of the whole story of how my music has gone is because I had a kid in 94. So it made far different than it was, because I grew up without a dad, and I really did not want to have my daughter grow up without a dad. As I went off sort of chasing dreams and doing all the things. And I remember talking to her when she was little, and I'd be going away, and she said, "I know you have to go away for work." And I said, I would always be very careful to say, "I don't have to go away. I want to go away. I love doing this, what I'm going away to do. I hate being away from you. It sucks. And this is what life is sometimes, is trying to figure out how to make the best choices." And I tried that in the best way I know, to be a good dad and be an artist, a sustainable artist. And so the Sketchy EPs were really born of that. Far, there was some stress around that, because I wouldn't want to tour for as long as everyone else would, because I'd want to get back home. And anyone who knows about touring knows that, well, it's just simple economics. The longer you're out there for, the less money is spent getting home and getting out there and doing all the things. So you just get out there, everyone's going, and it's just a more feasible way to do it, basically. It doesn't really work though with people who care about being home regularly. And I really did. So that was a kind of a stressful thing in Far. And then in One Line Drawing, I was able to really start shaping my life around my fatherhood and my musical life around that. So I'd start doing these little chunks of tours where I'd hop on with a band and hop in the bus, or I'd just fly to a region of the country and rent a rental car and run around for like a week or two. And I basically had a agreement with my kid that I wouldn't be away for more than 2 weeks. We had a little bit of a grace area of days for when I'd go to Europe or something, where it really, you know, so between 2 and 3 weeks, but that was the basic agreement. And she was really little, but it was important to me to have a clarity around what was going on. And so, long story short, Mercat was exactly, that was the kind of thing that I was just doing with my daughter a lot, is just making up weird tunes and fucking around. And a lot of the Sketchy period was saying, these things that I'm making for such personal reasons, just for myself or just for a friend, or just think of my grandpa, or just think of my kid or whatever it is, they all have a place in what I show to the world. And in fact, maybe that's the most pure shit. I don't know about that or whatever, but I love when a thing starts out personally. So Mercat literally started in a dream. I had a dream about a superhero that was half cat and half fish and been run off the road by an SUV full of sorority girls. And it was just about to die. The kitty was about to die under the water. A fish said, I can give you life, but you have to take on, we have to share a fishy kitty spirit. And then it turned into Mercat. And this is literally a dream I had, I shit you not. And I made a comic strip about it. And I was dating this woman at the time who had a niece and a nephew that I'd love to hang out with and make music. And so there was a kid's drum set and a piano in their dad's house. And we were all hanging out one day and I was making Meerkat. And so the kids got on the recording. The dad plays bass on that recording. And it's so, it's just a, it's a song and a recording that comes from a really strange dream. And then just letting in whatever was around me in life, which is really what all of those recordings are about, is letting the recordings and the songs and everything exist in the course of life. And I'm going to make one weird little leap here that comes to mind. I don't know if anyone loves Thelonious Monk like I do. He's an incredible
jazz pianist. Got his greatest hits, both vinyl editions right behind me.
Oh, shit. I love that. So I remember watching Straight No Chaser or some Thelonious doc. And I, like many people, I have wondered about his timing, his phrasing, all the space he leaves in between notes sometimes. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what he's known for. And it's certainly something I love about him. And I was watching him play a tune that I really knew the melody for. And there was a note that waited extra long to come around. And it was just because he was wiping the sweat from his brow before he hit the next note. And it occurred to me, oh, he's just living. And the song gets to exist, this version of the song gets to exist in this moment. And that's the moment where he had to wipe the sweat. So that's why you've got the big hang on that note that sounds like this brilliant, thought out, considered choice, but it's really just a creature living and creating. And that really affected me. And that's what I try to bring into my music in general. But certainly when that really got going was the first time that I was recording entirely on my own and trying to show it to people in any way. And so Meerkat is the example of that, of just, that's just where I was at. And I was really taking off all the filters and trying to go, this makes me laugh and makes me happy. I have no idea if anyone will care about it, but here we are all these years later and it, you know, you care about it. And I just love that.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I use the word endearing to me because it reminds me, it's relatable to me in me with my daughter and having to making little stupid videos or acting together. Stuff will come up on social media of stuff I did with her years ago. And like, that's to me what this sounds like. It just sounds like natural and real. And I know if I didn't have that personal experience, I would skip that shit 100 times out of 100. You know what I mean?
Totally. Totally.
But when I have the personal experience that I can relate to it, it makes it a whole different thing.
And absolutely. That's, and that's true for so much of my music. And until someone I think has a context for all of the different things I do, they might hear one song or any number of songs.
Yeah.
And unless they have a personal connection to that genre or an experience or whatever it is that I'm doing, they might really not like that song. Someone might be really into my soft stuff and they might hear, the new Plutocracy Planet tune. And be like, if they had no idea who it was, they would just be like, turn off this fucking racket. and same with the Sons of Alpha and Centauri stuff, if they're into the softer stuff. And then similarly, if someone's into my really serious stuff, they might hear Meerkat. And if they don't know it's me, they're just like, ooh, who is this person I want to beat the shit out of, you know? Right. But this is all just a creature doing its thing. And I really appreciate your candor because I know that's true. And that's a little bit part of the reason that I wanted to include a couple things like Meerkat, Oh, I'm So Lucky, Disco Manifesto, NCA. Those all come to mind of songs that I do know they're hateable. There's another one line drawing song called Smile, which I remember writing the chorus for Smile, and it's got a robot solo in it and this very weird production. And I remember thinking, wow, a lot of people are going to really fucking hate this. And I didn't release it because of that. I'm never trying to be a contrarian. It's that Thelonious Monk thing. I just have this idea that if I do stuff in a way that feels real for me, not worrying about what anyone else thinks is real or not, but just for me, it doesn't mean that I'm going to have widespread popularity or success. In fact, it might be a mark against that because I think a lot of people that are do a little more strategizing for how they release stuff and what they record and what they show to people. But we're going to circle back to the emo word for a second, because for me, the only cool thing about emo ever was that in the beginning, it was kind of a response to macho hardcore and rock stuff that was happening at the time. It was, and as far as I could tell, it was a celebration of every mood in music, not just, and now it's become this sort of angsty, flat ironed mascara, whatever thing. And that's fine. That's right. I got no judgment against all of that stuff. I have in my life, I suppose, at different times. And I just, at this point, everyone's just doing their thing. It's totally fine. And what was interesting about me and emo at that time, that was a funny slip, but it is true. I'll say it, is that I wasn't just doing the mopey thing. There's plenty of mopey shit back then for sure. Cause I was moping a lot. I was depressed and confused and romance was tough and being a father and trying to be a musician and trying to not be in poverty was tough. And you know, there's a lot of shit going on and there was a lot of incredibly joyous shit going on. So why isn't that allowed to the party? And that's what I thought was cool about emo and what I was doing about back then. And now cut to, well, you know, 25 years later since that whole period. And, you know, Beyonce says emo. They say emo on Drag Race. They say emo, like emo is a, it's sort of like rock star. It is a term that has left entirely the context that it started in. And now is just a word in our culture. And it's wild to have been a part of the sort of origins of that word that has now become this thing that is just out there. But for me, the special part was the actual emotional part and letting every emotion in. And I know that's not for everyone. And I know it's a thing that a lot of people, other artists, other, you know, fans of some parts of my music, fans of none of my music, whatever it is, people have hated that aspect of what I do, especially the silly or hypersincere stuff that I do. And I totally get it. I might want to punch me too. It's just all I can say is that I was really, and I'm always really trying to be the full spectrum of the creature that I am and be brave enough to let that be a part of whatever people take or leave or give money to or not or hate or love or whatever. I just want to know as best I can that I'm doing it in a way that feels pure for me. And that's it. But I do get you. I do. I swear. Well,
I love everything you just said there, because in full confession, for me, one line drawing, when it was around the first time and I was 18 years old or 20 years old, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just the vibe of any music that sounded like that to me, what we were calling emo back then was just pussies crying on their guitars. You know what I mean? Like that was it. Like I didn't want to hear none of that. It wasn't. What's funny is that I had to be more mature to listen. Like now you can look through my record collection. There's plenty of emo records in it. But back then, fuck no. Like that was the lull in the show.
Good. It sounds like emo for you. And this might track with our ages or whatever. Because I remember when I was around that age, I had a similar thing with the Smiths, the Cure, Depeche Mode, OMD. Joy Division, Order, this whole crew of music that was kind of gothy and whatever it was, all I knew was I fucking hated the people who listened to that music I couldn't like take that music seriously or something. And then as I grew up, I was like, fuck man, The Cure is actually one of the greatest bands ever. And yeah, Morrissey turns out to be a lunatic, but the Smiths really did some bangers, you know, and sort of all of it, Pet Shop Boys, the whole dance, vaguely queer, vaguely goth, vaguely whatever it was. Again, I think a response to
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
really heavy macho shit, ironically, I don't think I was grown enough to realize that I wasn't a particularly macho creature. I was a tiny little person. My nickname was literally Tiny Bookman because I was fucking 4'7" and 70 pounds and read books all the time. And so that's who I was. And so I think I wasn't even ready to absorb that, oh gosh, I guess this music actually does speak to and for me in ways that I'm not even comfortable with yet.
Right.
Cause yeah, those, especially those weepy feelings. Yes. Sometimes they're just contrived and annoying, but also they're uncomfortable. And it's sort of, I liked mining the really uncomfortable parts of the sadness and the fear and the loneliness just as much as I loved to be with the silliness. It's all, it's all the same thing to me. So anyway, I really appreciate your honesty about that. Cause I wish more people would be real about that of just like, I fucking hated this shit initially. And then I had to come around to it because, and that's why I tell the truth about that. It's like, I admit that I was an ignorant little fuckface, but hey, you know, here we are, this is how we grow. So yeah.
Yeah. But anyway. I mean, for me, it's not just this type of music. You know what I mean? Like I've talked about kind of ad nauseum over the last year about how I've just suddenly decided over the last year that I'm going to discover jazz. So when you mentioned like Thelonious Monk and all that, like I'm going to go back and I'm going to, cause of course I've heard jazz before, but did I ever care about it? No, I just thought it was a bunch of, you know, whatever. I don't know. I just didn't
like it. Anyone who doesn't know about a genre, this is a universal truth. Generally speaking, when someone says, I don't like a whole genre of music, what they're saying is, or especially when they say that famous thing, it all sounds the same to me.
Yeah.
People say that about punk, about reggae, about folk, about hip hop, about so many different genres, and as jazz is probably the king of all of them, of where people say, it all sounds the same to me. And all that says to me is, oh, you haven't listened. You aren't curious about that. You haven't checked in about this whole body of work that a bunch of humans have done. That is just jazz, people say it a lot and it's just true. It's a uniquely American art form. And it's a wild land where so much was invented.
Several different varieties. Yeah.
And, oh my gosh. Yeah. It's just everywhere. And that's what I adore about it. And it sounds so fucking pretentious, but I don't care. I know that I'm not a jazz artist. I've never tried to make jazz music. It's sort of like, I'm not even a metal artist. I don't try to make that, but I am inspired by innovators in those fields. And I have tried to take, and it sounds strange, but the improvisation that I love to do live and sometimes recorded comes from adoring jazz and learning as a small person, oh, they do this shit differently every night. They've got kind of a basic roadmap, but then they just go for it. And that just turned me on so much and didn't make me want to be a jazz artist. It just made me want to bring improvisation and that curiosity about what a composition can be from night to night with different people, with a different crowd, in a different mood. It's really amazing. So I'm just really, I love it when people, whether it's sociopolitical or musical, or it doesn't matter the context. I love when people aren't afraid to grow and change. And that I think ends up all these years later being the people, most of the people that have hung out with what I do seem to be people as much as because I talk to them a lot because it's a pretty small little crew. PC new people who are really curious about moving forward in life. And I feel very lucky that whether they like everything I do or not, you know, very little of what I do or whatever it is, that they're at least curious enough about me as another creature who's searching.
Yeah.
That's what I adore. So I just appreciate you. It's really cool.
Well, one of the things that I appreciate about you and the couple of things that you kind of talked around, maybe exactly at, I don't know. Is that you have,
I think talking confidence. Around is a good term for whatever it is that I do. I appreciate that.
Well, you have this confidence to release all this stuff, no matter what it is. And just that, like, where does that come from? Cause not a lot of people have, a lot of people take the songs that they wrote for their sketchbook or whatever, you know, however you want to phrase it, and keep them hidden forever and maybe show one or two people, but you've always been willing, at least from my perspective, to just unleash it all. And that's to me is very impressive and even brave. So where'd you get that from?
I mean, I think I got to give it up a little bit to my mom and dad because in different ways, as flawed as they were and are, my dad is dead. My mom is very much alive. They both, in the less flattering side of town, they both had a lot of fuck you for the world. Yeah. And my mom still does. And I absorbed that for sure. And they both did have a real searching component aspect, something to their personality that I think also really rubbed off on me. And so that's just a suspicion. But when I think of why I've hopped around and specifically, yeah, you said the word brave, I think, and I appreciate that because I do think it's brave. I think it's especially in a business context. I mean, you got to think that AC/DC at one point that Malcolm wrote something really sweet and folky, you know, that was really great. And it just, it's never going to make it because the brand is not that. And I totally respect that. It's just that it's hardly even a choice for me. Two things happened around the time that I was doing the sketchy stuff. One, I had a real kind of come to Jesus kind of situation where I had to look at my motivation for making music. Cause again, it was taking me away from my kid. It was making my life kind of complicated. And so I had to really look and go, is this about attention? Is it about validation? Is it about these sort of, very immature reasons for pursuing music in terms of seeing people on the cover of magazines and getting attention from other people sexually and all the, you know, all that stuff. I had to take a look at that. Or even if it was about making money, I had to take a look at that because none of those reasons were worth having as crazy a life as trying to be a sustainable musician generally is.
Yeah.
And the only thing that was worth it is, am I really in love with these ideas this much? Do I really want to pursue the melody that wakes me up at night and follow it through? Is that truly the center of my joy when it comes to doing this weird life? And I, as far as I can tell, it was, and it is, and it was an important time in my life because I could have easily left music because I don't think there's anything particularly inherently special about picking up a guitar and warbling a thing. It's about we're back to the feeling of it. And I think the feeling can be in any type of artwork. Of course, it can be in plumbing. It can be in the legal field. It can be in teaching. It can be in activism. It can be in any field. I think the feeling can be there. This elusive feeling that we're sort of talking about. And for me, once I established that I thought of it as concentric circles because I wanted to be realistic about it. So the center of the concentric circle is the idea, being in love with the idea. And then there are circles that are about attention and about money and about all of that. And they're in the concentric circle. They're sort of in the rings of the tree, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. I don't even mind that as part of the equation. I think that are just being sort of honest. All I think we're doing in this life is trying to trade time for money in some creative way. And as far as, and in this life, I mean, this sort of human societal city-based running water life. And so the bravery part came from that. It came from going, if the true deal here is that I'm in love with these ideas and sharing them in the, I say this often, but it's the clearest way I can try and illustrate it. Do you remember when you were like 5 doing a drawing and the feeling of doing the drawing of the superhero or the shark or whatever it was, that's what I was drawing back then, and showing it to someone? I don't know if you literally do, but maybe think on that.
Sure.
And anyone out there, think on that. But I went back to that feeling, and that's the feeling that I'm still trying to do, is that celebratory, no self-consciousness, but a little bit of fear that someone's going to like it or not. Kind of little kid thing. Here's a drawing I did. Do you like it? That's it. And I'm not even trying to make a pun with one line drawing. I'm just saying that it's as simple. The creative act for me is as simple as that. I had an idea. I tried to get it out of my head. Here it is. Do you like it? That's it. And when that became my North Star. It didn't even become about bravery. That's why I was curious about that word. And I understand that word. And I do feel like it was brave, but I wasn't trying to be brave. I was just trying to stay true to the engine that was making it all go. Because if that wasn't the engine, then I shouldn't have been doing it at all. And that was a personal decision. It wasn't, I shouldn't in some sort of moral way. It's I shouldn't because I have a daughter here and she's beyond words important to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to fuck around with that unless there's something else really transcendent happening. And so it wasn't that I was trying to be punk or emo or indie or brave or diverse or whatever. I was really just trying to make it worth it. I was really trying to make a life that was worth it, where I could sleep at night and that I would look back on later being proud that I was trying to marry being, as it were, being a good dad with being a sustainable artist.
Well, someone who values being a good father as much as you do, to me, that's all very admirable and respectable.
And I swear, I'm not saying it for that reason. That's just the truth.
I know.
Just,
and that's good.
Again,
that's
like, you know, like I really, I know it, you know, I really like it, same brave, admirable. I know those are the things that people try to be. And I think I am those things once in a while, but I think true bravery and whatever is truly admirable never comes from that. And that's all I was trying to be sure of. So I really appreciate the words. And I know it might sound ridiculous to someone, but we're back in the territory. I might still, this very interview might be way too fucking sincere or whatever, or heady or whatever thoughtful, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It is for a lot of people. And that's okay with me. I'm just trying to be here with you being the creature that I am and be as honest as I can be. And I'm just really enjoying the way you have experienced it. It feels validating and cool. And I love that you're trying to have an interesting conversation right now, because that's, to me, all this shit is about.
Well, to me, that's perfect. That's exactly what, that's what I want. I don't want us just talking about,
and this is why we're here, because you like having these conversations about music with musicians and artists you dig, and you've got another job. You've got a whole other life, but you do this on your lunch break because you fucking love it. That's what to me it's all about. Like, that's what the fun is here. And that's why I'm excited in this conversation right now. So thank you.
No, it's my pleasure.
I tell a lot of the same stories because they're the truth.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like saying the cool thing on stage. I would notice when like Bono or Bruce Springsteen or people would say this thing, and this is back before the internet. So, and it sounded so off the cuff and the whole crowd would roar.
Yeah.
And then I started hearing bootlegs or seeing multiple shows and going, oh, maybe that happened. And maybe it happened off the cuff one night, but then they were like, oh, that works. And then they kept it. And I love artists that do that. I adore Broadway, from Broadway to, you know, like, and Broadway, I mean the most planned out thing to the most unplanned out thing. I love all of it. And we're back to that terrible F word feeling. It's about the fucking feeling. So yeah. So good.
It's funny you say that about the live show, the speeches, the comments, because that happened to me recently here. Well, last summer, we took our daughters to go see Taylor Swift at Pittsburgh. Right?
There you go.
And that was a big show. I honestly tell everybody, it's probably, if not the best, one of the best things that I ever experienced. One of the main reasons was just watching the pure happiness of the kids for 3 hours straight. It was pretty amazing. Yeah. So then, of course, they love it, especially my youngest, who's 10. And when the movie came out, which is essentially the tour, it's the same show. I was watching it with her, and Taylor gets up there, and I was like, she's saying the exact same shit. I thought we were special. The same speech. It's everything That's is it. Like getting said at the right. Yeah, it's like, well, you know,
beautiful.
It worked for everybody.
And that's what it is. And look, that's called being a pro. I will say very, as honestly as I can, I have actively desired not to be a professional musician. Right. I understand that it's been my only job, but that part of it was never for me. I understand it. It works, especially in like really huge shows where there's a lot of consequence for every note and everyone spent a lot of money to be there and to make it happen. I get that everyone wants to make sure everything goes right. That's why every Super Bowl is almost every Super Bowl performance is entirely lip synced.
Yeah.
And all the tracks are pre-recorded because no one wants it to go wrong. And a lot of the big concert productions, especially now that we have BPMs and grids and everything is automated, there's not a room to fuck around. And so I'm not mad at those artists, but it is a very different world that I was never that into as an artist, not because I didn't like the, maybe I was scared to really make a thing and have it be the same every night. I don't know. I'm not trying to be cooler than anyone. I just know that I never felt comfortable. In fact, when I would have a cool moment at a show, I would then be self-conscious about repeating it because I would think, nah, that was a moment, you know,
but you got to keep it authentic. Yeah. You don't want to lose that authenticity.
It's all crazy. It's all the self-consciousness layers. But anyway, I love that. I remember, and speaking of which, I remember my daughter's first big show was Green Day. And I don't remember. I've seen Green Day a couple of times and they're one of the greatest live bands ever to exist. And that night, I don't remember one note they played because all I was doing was looking at Hannah and her friend that was with us freaking the fuck out to American Idiot. You know, it was just, that's what I remember.
Exactly. That's similar for me for the Taylor Swift thing.
When you said that brought that image to mind. I appreciate that.
Yeah. The sketchbook 1999 to 2001 comes, the street date for, let's say, the record, I guess, is May 10th on Iodine Recordings. Iodine's been putting out a lot of cool stuff. You've done a few things with them since they've come back. What are you most excited about for the release of this record?
Huh, it's a good one. Releasing things is so funny these days. And by the way, it is, it's on the streamings now, so people can go check it out there. So it's available digitally. And for anyone who wants physical stuff, no one has told me that it's sold out. So I presume there's still some copies of different pressings available. I think what I'm most excited about when it comes to Sketchbook being released in a more official way is people getting to know the music. Some people who have never, ever, ever heard it. Some people who have heard other stuff I've done, but never this stuff. Some stuff people, maybe there, you know, there's a lot of people that are getting the vinyl probably have heard a bunch of it because they've stayed in touch with me over the years. So I guess I'm excited for them to hear it in context and almost re-experience it because the whole releasing of it, the way I've done it, and Iodine has been this way for me. I love that you brought up Casey and Iodine because Casey's been so unbelievably encouraging and supportive over the past few years. And honestly, Sketchbook would not be getting released in this thoughtful and celebratory way if it weren't for Casey. He really reminded me how much the Sketchy EPs meant to him at that time in his life. And he said he thought they meant a lot to the community at that time of life, that there wasn't, when I started doing one line drawing, there weren't a lot of singers of rock bands that had left and started making these little lo-fi acoustic-y troubadour things. Since then, a lot of people have done that.
A thing.
But at that time, it was not a thing. No one knew what the fuck I was doing. And Casey was there then and so supportive and lovely then. That's how I met him, was he was doing a basement show with me and Steve Caven and Travis Piebald. And it was one of the funnest and sweetest rad basement shows that smelled like cat piss in my life. And then years later, after a lot of time, both off the grid in different ways, we reconnected and we made a record called Tender Wild. And then with Sketchbook, I was talking to him about re-releasing some of this stuff, actually 30 something to draw that circle in, was thinking about releasing it in some way. And he stopped me. I said, we're just going to put it out. It's going to be really sweet. It's not going to, you know, it'll be for whoever it is for. And he said, hey, let's make a little bigger deal of this. Let's promote this a little bit. Let's talk about it. And I was so happy that he said that because it made me take it a little more seriously too and think about, I guess 25 years on, this stuff is a pretty neat document of who I was, of what, and for anyone who's around at that time, it was a pretty interesting thing in the scene. So that's what I'm most excited about, is people getting to know this stuff again or for the first time. And I love the combination of that. Because of the way it's being released, I know that many, 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 many people who hear it will not have heard it in its initial release. Some of it I'm positive because it was released to hardly anyone when it was released. And some of it, they just weren't around or whatever. So I'm just excited for these tunes to get a chance to feel young again, to feel new again. Because like that thing I was saying about discovering a song in the 30s, I hope that someone hears this tune, you know, Aeroplanes or Tides or I'm So Lucky, and it hits them right where they are right now in their life. And then they get to, maybe they even hear it and they go, who's this new artist? You know? And yeah. Then they get to go, oh, it's 25 years old. I think if I'm excited for one thing, it's, I hope that at least a few people have that feeling of going, oh, this is kind of cool, new, weird, lo-fi bedroom emo shit. What's this? Oh, wow. It's this guy from then? So that's the feeling. That's what I'm excited about.
Well, you've already been halfway successful with me revisiting some of this stuff. So there you go.
That's true. I hadn't even thought about this. Whole conversation has been an illustration of what I'm actually the most excited about. So thank you for that. That's pretty perfect. That's a perfect roundup, man. Well noted.
Rock and roll music.
So there you have it. That was my conversation with Jonah of One Line Drawing. The song you just heard was Pollyanna. Of course, that appears on Sketchbook, available now through Iodine Recordings, though the vinyl is yet to come. So I think you can pre-order that at their website, and I'd encourage you to do so. Of course, I want to thank Jonah for his time, for his conversation. It was great to sit down with him over my lunch break and chop it up, as they say. And it's certainly a conversation I don't think I would have ever had if I hadn't started this podcast and made the connections that I have. And for reasons like that, I do find this whole thing very fulfilling. And whether you like the music I'm covering or not is really inconsequential. Not you, like individual you, whoever I'm talking to. It's more about the conversation connection. It's like, let me put it this way. When I listen to a lot of basketball podcasts, I talk about this all the time. And sometimes it's players from eras that I don't particularly care about or know anything about. And almost every time I find myself putting it on, pressing play, expecting not to be engaged, but by the end of it being all the way in and happy I did. It's like going to the gym. You hate going. And once you're there, you're like, yeah, this was a pretty good idea. Or once you leave, I should say. Once you get that pump, all right? Once you get vascular, you know what I'm talking about, all my fellow emos out there. Anyway, thanks to Jonah. Thanks to you. Thanks to Iodine. Thanks to whoever wants to be thanked. Except for all the people that I saw got married over the weekend that are friends of mine or were friends of mine. We're not friends anymore. You didn't invite me to your wedding. So we don't get to be friends anymore. It's a rule I've lived by for a very long time, which is really ironic because then I had a wedding and didn't invite anybody. So, whatever. I might be a hypocrite, but you got to invite me to your weddings or we're not friends anymore. So let's move on. Hey, before I do, I want to tell you about some stuff going on at Skid Row Garage this week, Thursday, April 18th. There is an awesome fucking show going on there. Weed Eater is the headliner. Telekinetic Yeti is on tour with them. So is Heavy Temple. They just released a great album last week on Magnetic Eye Records. I encourage you to check it out, but more so, I encourage you to go to that show. Flesh Terror is also opening, so you can check that out. A month from then, which I know, we're jumping ahead here, to the other side of the spectrum is a punk rock craft show from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Saturday, May 18th. Music, food, vendors, fun, even. What's that mean? It means more than 10 vendors, live music, and of course, food. What more could you want for a Saturday afternoon? For more information on any of that, just find Skid Row Garage on the internet. The tickets are still flying off the shelves for the 15-year anniversary weekend. Friday night with Violent Society, Saturday with Negative Approach, Sunday is the Metal Day. And if you haven't noticed, there's some other big ones. The Dahmers, Modern Life is War, Cop Out, Underdog, Strength for a Reason. There's all sorts of reasons to go to Skid Row Garage and check out what they got going on. So please do that before you move on with your day if you're local or plan on making a visit to good old York, Pennsylvania. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. But you know I got to play you a track, and I already promised you I'd play you one from Sons of Alpha Centauri. That's Jonah's other band he's got going on. They released an excellent record called Pool. It's out now on Exile on Mainstream. That came out only a couple weeks ago, March 28th to be exact. And this is the opening track from that record, Ephemeral. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye. Dead in Pepper Alley.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.